Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. You're confident when it comes to your work and life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same confidence when it comes to refinancing your existing mortgage or buying a home. It lets you understand all the details so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Yesterday, a 66-year-old man, James Hodkinson of Belleville, Illinois, opened fire at a congressional baseball practice in Alexandria, Virginia. Capitol Hill police shot and killed him, but not before he critically injured House Majority Whip Steve Scalise, Republican from Louisiana, and left four others wounded. We are not naive anymore. We know how hot, how angry our political culture has become. Now, this is just too much. This hour on Point, American civil society under fire. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What is happening here? How do we stop it, dial it down, address the rage? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here was Republican Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona. He was on that field out by first base. Scalise was at second. When the shooting began, Flake described what he saw yesterday to reporters about 3 hours after James T. Hodgkinson opened fire.
Steve Scalise was laying motionless on the field. He dragged himself off of the infield into the outfield, a trail of blood where he went, and wanted to get to him, but as long as there was gunfire overhead, we couldn't. So finally, when I heard that somebody said the shooter's down, I ran out to Steve and put pressure on the wound.
Trail of blood, pressure on the wound, a shooter down. This is the last 24 hours. Speaker Paul Ryan, Republican, called for unity yesterday in the House chamber.
We are being tested right now. I ask each of you to join me to resolve to come together, to lift each other up, and to show the country, to show the world that we are one house, the people's house, united in our humanity. It is that humanity which will win the day, and it always will.
We hope so. Not yesterday, exactly. Hodgkinson was a Bernie Sanders volunteer. Here was Sanders speaking to what happened yesterday.
I am sickened by this despicable act, and let me be as clear as I can be. Violence of any kind is unacceptable in our society, and I condemn this action in the strongest possible terms. Real change can only come about through nonviolent action, and anything else runs counter to our most deeply held American values.
Okay, that sounds nice, but here's Republican Alabama Congressman Gary Palmer. He was 20 yards away from the shooter at the baseball practice yesterday. He told CBS this morning he's worried about the country, about the republic.
Our republic's in danger. I think we're fraying at the edges. There's extremes on both sides. And I've been hearing some of the reports of what this gentleman had posted on his Facebook page, and it's not that different from some of the things that we're hearing from other people. So we have got to tone down the rhetoric. I think it has to begin with us, both parties.
We're diving in today to look at what has happened here, what's going on with our civil society, civil culture in this country, the violence that has intervened only yesterday in a baseball field in Alexandria, Virginia. Joining me now in the studio is Ron Suskind, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, author of the New York Times bestsellers The Way of the World, The 1% Doctrine, The Price of Loyalty, A Hope in the Unseen. His latest book is Life Animated. Ron Suskind, welcome to On Point.
Great to be here, Tom.
Also with us in the studio, Heather Cox Richardson, professor of history at Boston College, author of To Make Men Free, A History of the Republican Party. Welcome, Heather.
Hi, Tom.
Ron and Heather are the hosts of a new politics and history podcast from WBUR out today. It's called Freak Out and Carry On. Pretty good title for today. And with us, we have in the studio Michael Graham, political commentator and columnist at the Boston Herald. Until just a few weeks ago, he was the podcast editor at the Weekly Standard. Michael, welcome back to On Point.
Happy to be here and happy to hear about this new podcast. I look forward to being a listener.
All this happiness, but we've got our issues to look at right here. I want to go to each of you in turn and just ask, I'll start with you, Ron. There was a shooting yesterday. It was political. It was clear that he had asked in the parking lot, are these Republicans or Democrats?
And he knew what they were, and he knew what he was shooting at. What was this? What happened?
This was a political hate crime. Are there political hate crimes in this country? No, there's a lot of them. There are shootings, 157, I think, mass shootings already in the United States this year alone. They often don't get lots of press. Many of them are born of hate and a dehumanizing that's going on. I think at its core, because of this coarsened dialogue of us, a political dialogue, public dialogue, folks essentially looking at the other as less than human, less than me, evil, wrong.
He was a Bernie Sanders supporter. Are you saying Bernie Sanders has coarsened our national dialogue?
No, I'm not willing to hand this to Bernie Sanders as cause, or frankly, hand it to some of my friends on the right who are out there trying to do what they think is best for those they represent.
Well, somebody is, if you're talking about dialogue, someone's saying the words.
I think the fault, the core of the problem, comes from a country that no longer gets informed by any single unifying entities or force or agrees on things as simple as the sun rising in the east. That's something that's happened, Tom, during our lifetimes, where we once did gather around a campfire as a nation to say, okay, on this we can agree, it's indisputable, reality-based, if you will, and that no longer is the case. So what you've got are competing realities that often are about demonizing the enemy rather than in any way finding common ground. Because for many of them, just the act of finding common ground is seen as a compromise, as a loss. And that's what you're finding day to day in the country.
Michael Graham, you've watched the news along with the rest of us. You saw what happened yesterday. What did you see in this act? And what's going on here?
What I saw in this act was a person choosing to commit evil. And if I can do a linguistic pet peeve, I hate the word tragedy for events like this. Tragedy.
I haven't heard that word yet today. You've raised it.
I've heard it all over the place. So this tragedy. I mean, and we do it. We do it often. You know, the Orlando terrorist attack, which was a terrorist attack, was not a tragedy. It was a venal act.
Okay, fine. We're not talking about a tragedy. We're talking about a shooting.
Exactly.
Yesterday.
And somebody chose to commit that act. And so I don't blame Bernie Sanders and the emails he sent out after the Gabby Giffords shooting, where he fundraised off of the shooting and solicited money and said this was caused by the rhetoric of the right. I don't blame him for that. I blame the shooter. But it is, I will tell you, as a guy who did talk radio for 15 years, many of it here in Boston with a largely left-to-center audience, it is fascinating to hear the conversation about discourse and where the discourse is and talk about this person who committed a violence from the left after spending my entire career being blamed for every single act of violence, whether it was actually on the right or not. I wrote a book about the Tea Party called That's No Angry Mob, That's My Mom, about how the Tea Party was blamed for violence that never occurred.
I mean, we're talking
about how dangerous they were.
Yeah, we've got a Republican Alabama congressman. You heard him quoted here. He's saying Republicans saying we've got to tone down the rhetoric.
I don't buy it.
It's just an individual just shooting off in a vacuum.
Oh,
really?
No. He's processing the content that he's getting, but I don't want to restrict content. And that's what I'm saying is it is very fascinating to hear this conversation now coming from someone whose political motivation was from the left. And I will tell you, there are a lot of talk radio listeners and Fox News viewers who maybe are not regular part of your audience. And what they see
is extreme, and
I hope they are.
I
hope they are. But what they see is the extreme double standard. This guy had a, you know, Gadsden flag bumper sticker and shot up a Democratic baseball thing. It would be all about, you know, we blame Trump and Rush Limbaugh and blah, 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 because I've been there. I've lived through it. And now, to my friends on the right, I will not put the shoe on the other foot. Discourse does not cause violence. We've had this discourse since Jefferson versus Adams. Individual people choose to behave violently, and that is not a legitimate reason to restrict conversation.
Nobody's talking about restricting conversation, but people are talking about the tenor of that conversation, mm-hmm. where it's come to. And look, this guy didn't come out of a vacuum. He didn't drop down here from Mars. Heather Cox Richardson, what did you see unfold yesterday, and what's it part of?
Well, the real question here, I think, is this unusual? Have we been here before? I mean, you just mentioned way back to the early Republic. We do go through these periods in America where we have extreme political rhetoric, and they've recurred periodically since the early republic. We had the crisis after the War of 1812. We had the 1850s, which led to the Civil War. We had the 1890s. We had the 1920s. And now we've got this going on where we have extreme polarization. But the trick to all of those eras is that there are times when America is having to grapple with a tremendous change in some fashion. The early Republic was when America was dealing with a terribly unstable economy because of a war between Britain and France. Mm-hmm. The 1850s, you had the rise of the American West. And what was that going to mean for America? The 1890s, you have industrialization. When this happens after 1950, in the period we're in now, you have the problem of grappling with a new nuclear war. And now we have the problem of globalization. And when you have a major societal change, you destabilize American politics and somebody loses power. And when those people lose power, they always turn to really extreme, crazy rhetoric, from calling Abraham Lincoln the original gorilla to saying that Thomas Jefferson was trying to destroy America. You get that extremism on both sides.
So is this about the rhetoric, or is it about real, deep political division? Is it language, or is it interest?
I believe it's language, because if you actually look at the way the political scientists will tell you that when politicians on the right or the left take a stand on a particular issue, Americans tend to fall into very strong categories on that issue. But if you go down that list even a little bit to issues that have not been deliberately politicized by political language to get an advantage, Americans tend overwhelmingly to agree, even on real hot-button issues like, for example, trade or abortion.
You mean if, despite the real political issues on the table and the interests at play, if politicians tone down their rhetoric, all this violence would go away?
Well, violence will never go away, because Michael's absolutely
political
right.
Political violence.
Well, Michael's absolutely right that people, there are always loose cannons in society, always have been, always will be, and they always are going to commit some kind of antisocial behavior. But if politicians would tone down their rhetoric, that would not be overlaid, I think, with the political implications they have nowadays.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. With Rocket Mortgage, you can apply simply and understand fully so you can mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American civil society under fire after the baseball field shooting yesterday. Bullets flying, a congressman in critical condition. Heather Cox Richardson is with us, professor of history at Boston College, author of To Make Men Free, A History of the Republican Party. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Ron Suskind is here. They have a new podcast coming out today, Freak Out and Carry On. Pretty good title for the moment we're in. Michael Graham is with us, political commentator, was podcast editor at the Weekly Standard until about 5 minutes ago. He's commentator for the columnist for the Boston Herald now. You can join us. What is happening here? Why this much anger, this much violence? Is our republic coming apart at the seams? And who or what is to blame? What needs fixing here? President Trump, right out there yesterday, talking about what had happened. Here he was.
Congressman Scalise is a friend, and a very good friend. He's a patriot, and he's a fighter. He will recover from this assault. And Steve, I want you to know that you have the prayers not only of the entire city behind you, but of an entire nation, and frankly, the entire world.
Well, I don't know about the world, but the country is very focused on this. Democratic Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe talked at a news conference in Alexandria, scene of the crime, saying that political discourse has become poisonous in America.
Things have become very partisan, very hardened in this country today.
Yeah.
We got to begin to work together to get things done. We're the greatest nation on earth. And there has been too much, I believe, raw discourse in this country today that's pulling people apart.
Pulling people apart. And here was Republican Rep. Rodney Davis of Illinois. He was at the baseball practice yesterday where the gunman opened fire. He talked here with Fox News. Talked to, he too, the Republican, about political rhetoric.
The majority of bills that we pass are passed on a very bipartisan basis, but it's the major issues that lead to political discourse that has, in my opinion, led to such an uptick in just hateful, hateful rhetoric of all sides. And I stand here today and say, stop. We have to stop.
Michael Graham, you got all these people saying hateful, hateful rhetoric on all sides. It's got to stop. And yet you insist it's not about the rhetoric?
No.
Then what is it? Then what's going on?
You had an individual nutburger. I mean, the good news
individuals
is
individuals don't operate in a vacuum. They do not.
There is very relatively little political violence in the United States, which is fantastic. If you look at history, for example, the anarchist period, the historian is here with us, and you know, politicians expected to get shot. You know, Teddy Roosevelt got shot and then kept talking.
Four American presidents assassinated. It's no joke.
We've had periods of widespread violence. But I want to ask you this. This to you once again on behalf of the conservative community that's having their own conversation right now.
Yeah.
If someone said, what's the problem of political violence in America in the 20th century? Is it on the 21st century thus far?
21st.
Would you say it's the left or the right? I assume you'll say it's the right because that's the assumption in America. But in fact, if you look at the violence we've had, it's been overwhelmingly from the left, from the assassination porn over George W. Bush, Bush Hitler, to the Occupy Wall Street
movement. Wait a minute,
that wasn't
violence. That was intense rhetoric. I thought we were talking about violence.
Well, we are because they had the Occupy Wall Street movement.
Wait,
which,
that wasn't. Now you're talking about rhetoric.
No, I'm talking about violence. There were who's throwing bricks through windows? Who's setting stuff on fire? Who's rioting in the streets?
Not many people.
No, I agree with you. Certainly not on the left.
But compare. I'm sorry.
You're not getting that many shooters on the left compared to the right. You know that.
No. You're not getting any shooters on the right.
That's why everyone is saying, oh my, one from the left.
That's my point. It's so,
now they're saying one from the left. What a surprise.
What do you mean no shooters from the right? I mean, this isn't about pointing fingers, but let's be real. You've got shooters on the right.
I mean, once again, good news, very little political violence. But the Tea Party movement, no violence. The Antifa movement. Who's rioting at college campuses to stop people from speaking? It's not the right. It's the left.
Well,
who's throwing stuff through windows? It's not the right. It's the left. I was at the inauguration. Who was out burning stuff in the streets? It was not the right. It's the left. Who's talking about America about to be taken over by some fascist when we have the most powerless president probably since, I don't know, Carter? It's not the right. It's the left.
All right. And yet we've had a Republican candidate, you know, on the hustings talking about, hey, you know, take that guy out and give him a good whooping, basically,
right
there at the center of our
political. And we had Democratic money spent to send crowds to a Trump event during the campaign in Chicago in the streets. You had riots the streets.
Okay, there's the characterization.
I don't want to go down the path of we've got to restrict conversation because I know how this works. The conversation that gets restricted is the conversation on the right.
I mean, you're stuck on that, but I'm listening to Republicans today who are saying, and you heard them right there. I got all kinds of them here on tape saying, we have got to tone it down. Ron, your eyebrows are up through your forehead here. What's on your mind?
Yeah, look. And the fact of the matter is, when it comes to everyone has a gun, hate immigrants, hate people who don't look like you, hate people of various races, it is mostly come from the right in our adult life. And you know that, Mike. You know, the bottom line is this, is that right now there's too much self-interest of the political class and the media class born of division. The self-interest of the country is always born of compromise. I mean, the fact is, everything is compromised from the crafting of the Constitution, with one exception in the United States, the Civil War. That's the one moment we couldn't compromise, and look how that ended. Right now, we're at a moment where the people of the country, in their hearts, know compromise is our nature. It's what works. But the political class and much of the media class, as is now arrayed, is profiting in its way from division. And right now, at moments like this, moments of crisis, you have an opportunity. Especially, you've got congressmen lying on a baseball field scared to death.
Yeah.
That's a moment of trauma that often yields a change to say, look, we have got to not just say, let's get along. We have to do something to show we can move forward, not just in rhetoric, but in action. That's the opportunity of a moment like this.
I want to look at that opportunity. Heather Cox Richardson, you've got people saying these days, my God, what is happening? Are we rolling into some kind of civil war without boundaries here? Not sort of north-south neat, but rather, you know, red-blue patched all over the country. Are we within the bounds of what America has seen in terms of the vitriol and even violence? Or are we in some kind of new terrain here? Do you see this as a potential turning point, or are we still hurtling down Danger Alley?
We look very much right now like the 1850s, and that always strikes terror into people's hearts because they say,
here comes
where
the Civil War.
Yes, but what I always point to, we also look very much like the 1890s, which, as Michael points out, is a period when there was extraordinary violence in the streets
in
America.
And this is when people were being herded into factories to work, and there was a lot of labor
tension. They're not being herded into factories, but yes, people are—
off the farm, into the factory, into the wage economy, and all kinds of tension with unions and more.
Tens of thousands of strikes, police breaking heads in the streets. It's a terrible time. We have these periods in American history, but what is crucial to me and what I think is so incredibly exciting about this time— is that when you have this extremism on, and I would agree with Ron, I see it on the right, and I think historically, you look at the facts, it's on the right. But yes, there's certainly rhetoric on the left. I read very widely on both sides. When you get these periods of extraordinary extremism that are divorced from reality.
Divorced from reality? What does that mean? There's a reality here. People are arguing about it.
But the rhetoric is divorced from reality. And I can talk about that.
Okay.
But the point that I want to make here is that when you get these periods, you get this chaos, if you will, that has the potential to have the rise of the next Abraham Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, Dwight Eisenhower, people who were extraordinarily widely popular and who put America on a course that reflected both our extraordinary principles, the principles of equality and of fairness and of self-determination, and that also both reinforced those principles but also put America into a time in which the economy was much better, people worked together very well, and the country actively moved forward.
Okay,
and I look around now and I say, here we are.
Okay, great. But Abraham Lincoln, came in full flower in the midst of a civil war.
He didn't. He came into full flower in the midst of this kind of language. Now, he was rejected by a part of the country, but he was rejected by a part of the country in part because they did not have access to accurate information. The South quite deliberately kept reality from Southern readers. That was quite deliberate on their part. And I don't think we're there because we have the internet.
Well, all I'm saying, the internet can cut both ways in terms of what people know. But Abraham Lincoln served as president while this country was at civil war. Now, I'm all for leaders who can take us to better ground. But I don't want it in the context of a civil war. I mean, people are talking here about the Republic itself fraying. Republicans are talking about this today, Michael Graham. Are we there?
How many political shootings have there been? I mean, Ron, with all due respect, you're wrong about the math. I'm talking about violence as a whole. You keep squinting at me when I talk about campuses on fire. For a lot of people sitting at home, they go, why are these campuses on fire? Once again, it's not the right-wing putsch that's on fire. It's people who are on the left who object to ideas, and so they turn to violence. You think of bricks going through windows
whack-a-mole.
Is not violence.
We're playing whack-a-mole.
I agree with you. That's the problem.
But you can't just look at that and forget about all the rhetoric that has been super hot.
So it's a political gun issue.
Ron, what do you got?
Just throw it out there. Look, I mean, yes, what we're dealing with here, are we going to be able to harness sweet uses of adversity here? Because it does come from trauma. It always does in the United States. Oh, my God, we've been through hell. Now what do we do to come
together? Find a way.
And how high will that level of hell be before the United States finally wakes up and says, we are one nation? We're going through steps on that process now.
This is enough for my taste right now. Ron Suskind, Michael Graham, Heather Cox Richardson, please stand by. Lots of callers here. Allison in Nashville, Tennessee. Allison, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Originally, I had called wanting to talk about the fact that it seems like this has been painted very much as a political rhetoric thing, and I don't remember that with the Gabrielle Giffords shooting. But having listened to your gentleman from the right, I find him very disingenuous, and I find it really frustrating, and I think a big root of the problem that we have people out there who are going, there's all this violence on the left, but he doesn't want to talk about the lynching pictures of Obama for the last 8 years or the basic right machine of disinformation out there spreading rhetoric that is both violent and false. And I think that this person was a crazy person, and we should just talk about it that way. But if we're going to point fingers at one side versus the other being more rhetoric-filled and more violent with the way that they talk about the other side, I think it's the right.
Allison, let me put it to Michael Graham, and I appreciate your call from Nashville. Let me just listen to this first on CBS Evening News last night. This was White House correspondent Major Garrett talking about heated rhetoric on display during the presidential campaign.
Hillary Clinton is a bigot. During the campaign, then-candidate Trump used incendiary language to describe his Democratic opponent, Hillary Clinton.
Such a nasty woman.
She, in turn, called Trump's supporters deplorable.
The racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic.
Okay, and on down the list. He delivers it with more punch. She's kind of just rolling it out there. But you hear Allison in Nashville says, come on, Michael. This is coming from the right, and let's look at it. Now, the bullets came from the left yesterday.
But first of all, Heather's nailed it with the whack-a-mole. I mean, this is what happens when you turn this into the whose rhetoric is more dangerous and who causes violence. You end up with this whack-a-mole scorecard thing. I actually agree with the caller that this was an individual shooter. I don't think it's reasonable to say because a comedian has a severed head of Donald Trump on CNN, and it takes them 24 hours to fire her, and Senator Franken takes a week to decide not to appear with her, that you've got a play in New York where people cheer when the Caesar as Trump is stabbed to death.
False,
I don't think
false. We talked for that about an hour yesterday. Right. They're not cheering. They're in stunned silence. They're not cheering.
Okay, I'm glad you clarified that because I saw media reports that were cheering. But I don't. You've had, go back to Vietnam and the rhetoric of the Vietnam era. You have angry people speaking angrily. I say keep talking.
Keep talking, but the shooting, too much. Andy in Washington, D.C. Andy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm just going to put it this way, and a lot of your people won't like it. If the left would like this to slow down, they need to stop advocating for violence. And I'm going to go back to, first, we protested speakers in Berkeley, California. Then we started riots to stop speakers in Berkeley, California. Then the anti-Fada, who identifies with the left, decided it was okay to take violent action to stop speech. And now a member of the left has decided it's fine to start shooting to stop speech because our elected representatives are the people we elect to speak for us. So if the left would like it to stop, they should stop advocating for violence.
And what about the stick in the eye of the right, Andy? Do you not see? Our caller mentions Gabby Giffords. I don't know the rhetoric on the right. What about that?
You name the guy on the right that's shot at senators, and I'll agree with you that that's wrong. But right now,
here we are today.
There's rhetoric on both sides. Which is the side that is acting violently?
Andy, let me hold that right there and get one more. Waterford, Pennsylvania, Dolores, you're on the air. Thank you for calling. Thank you, Andy. Dolores, you're on.
Tom, hi. I don't see how anyone can be surprised by what happened yesterday. I mean, really, look at this country. Let's look at the campaign. Trump encouraged violent acts against his opponent. Look.
Well, he said lock her up. He didn't say cut her down.
Right. But James Fellows was at the RNC in Cleveland and appalled by what he had heard. Ted Nugent encourages someone to kill President Obama and gets invited to the White House.
Yeah, that's true.
I look at talk to the Southern Poverty Law Center regarding the increase in hate crimes against Latinos and Muslims in this country. Even Representative Sanford made a comment today that some of this has to be put in the blame of Donald Trump. Okay.
Dolores, we've got it. I appreciate your call as well. Ron Suskind, you heard Andy's complaint from Washington, echoing Michael here, saying free speech, we go out and try and talk, and here comes the Antifa. Dolores saying, cranked up the rhetoric, and it's the right. How do we get to this higher ground that Heather Cox Richardson points out when we're sort of still trading these deep barbs on who's to blame?
There's going to have to be some leader, I dare say, coming forward who says, look, we're dealing with deep structural issues that Heather mentions in the United States. Everyone knows what they are. Globalization. The world caught up with us over the last three or four decades.
Yep.
All the stuff we know.
Yep.
We're going to deal with it in a sober way. We're going to agree in the facts. If you don't agree in these facts that are demonstrably true, leave the table. And we're going to come up with some solutions. I dare say if some political leader were to do that, in good faith, people from surprising camps on both left and right would say, okay, let's tone it down and let's get to solutions. Right now, we don't have that because people are profiting from division. That includes Donald Trump. It's how he got there. Lots of hate, lots of anger. He tapped it. He tapped it brilliantly. And he tapped a nativist core that's always been part of the country. Real Americans, not these dirty immigrants coming in, not these folks, not the pure real American that I am. Look, it goes way back, and it's right now in the wheelhouse of what mostly the right is profiting from.
ultimately, I'm not saying the right doesn't know how solutions are born. I'm just saying at this moment, they are not defining their self-interest as compromise until they do, mostly from crisis. We're going nowhere.
Is the left defining their self-interest as compromise?
Well, I think they're starting to do more extremism than they frankly have done with a lot of third-way stuff that's happened over the last couple of years. They said we got to be just as angry as the right, and that's what they're doing.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking on this morning, this day after the shootings in Alexandria, Virginia, that left the majority whip in critical condition, four wounded there, about what is happening with American civil society. It is clearly under fire right now. Bullets flying at a baseball practice, a congressman in critical condition. Heather Cox Richardson is with us. Ron Susskind is here. They're co-hosts of the new podcast, Freak Out and Carry On, out today from WBUR. Check it out. Looks at politics and history. Michael Graham is here, political commentator, columnist at the Boston Herald, former podcast editor at the Weekly Standard. You can join us. What do you see? Do we only come together now for a moment in moments of tragedy or outrage or sorrow at violence? Are we being driven by the loudest, harshest voices? What do we have to resolve to get past this? After saying earlier in the day yesterday that Democrats were over vitriolic, New York Republican Congressman Chris Collins later said on CBS Evening News that both parties were to blame for the tone in Washington.
I can only hope that the Democrats do tone down the rhetoric. The rhetoric has been outrageous, and the anger directed at Donald Trump.
But later he said the fault lies with both sides.
And I think all of us can be a little introspective now. I will be, I can promise you, to just say, let's just notch it down, you know, a couple of decibels.
Notch it down a couple of decibels, but not everybody was on that page, even at this time. Here was Newt Gingrich, former House Speaker, railing against what he called the increasing intensity of hostility on the left on Fox News. The host pushed back and asked if we should rise above thinking in terms of left and right in moments like these. Here was Gingrich.
You've had a series of things which send signals that tell people that it's okay to hate Trump, it's okay to think of Trump in violent terms, it's okay to consider assassinating Trump, and then suddenly we're supposed to rise above it. Until the next time?
Heather Cox Richardson, historically, when there are real political differences, and I get what you're saying, that they're amped up by politicians using hot rhetoric and the hottest possible framing. But when the differences are deep, how have Americans sorted them out shy of Shiloh?
Well, one of the reasons we get this sort of rhetoric is the recognition on the part of certain politicians that they no longer command a majority. And when the political system readjusts itself to look at and take into consideration what the majority wants, this tends to resolve itself, usually within the parties, not by somehow there being a clash between the parties. And you see this dramatically in the Republican Party, which has consistently reformed itself to go from being a party that protects the very wealthy down to protecting equality of opportunity again. But what's really interesting to me about this moment, one of the things that's really interesting that we have not discussed here yet that is so important, and that is that what is unique about this moment right now is that the new voices in American politics are women. The gender gap became huge over this last election. Women are more active politically than they ever have been before, and they are not using this sort of divisive rhetoric. And it's interesting to me that in this whole discussion of what here that we've had, that we've not mentioned that there is one thing that suggests whether somebody will be a shooter either on the right or the left, and that is that that person has a history of domestic violence or domestic abuse.
Meaning these are abusers who are committing?
Meaning that if you are trying to look at the issue of active shooters, especially people who take on mass shootings, which are family shootings, you have to look at the fact that there is a gendered issue here. And the fact that women are involved in this political moment in a way that they never have been before, I do think changes the equation in a way that we have never seen before.
But I don't see, and I take your gender point, and that is fascinating, and over time this will be very interesting to see, and let's hope that it's got a great effect. But on this issue of how we sort out the issues that divide, I see people dug in and, you know, wrestling for that tiny margin of majority each time, rather than saying, well, if only we go down this path in harmony or that path in harmony, it'll all be sorted out.
He would have said the same thing in 1857. And Abraham Lincoln took a look at the fact that there was an incredibly rising, powerful anti-immigrant party and a group of populists in the North and all sorts of different groups and said, wait a minute, what Americans believe in is fairness and equality and a government that does not kowtow to the very wealthy. That's what we stand for. And he put together a giant coalition. And I think the moment is ripe to do exactly that right now. But like Ron, I'm looking for the person, male or female, who's going to step forward and say, this is what America stands for. And that person's going to attract not simply Democrats or Republicans, but is going to recreate the great middle in America, which has always been our most successful moment.
Ron, is that within reach? I'm not comforted by this reference to the 1850s, because we know what the 1860s were. Civil War.
Well, you know, I was a reporter in Washington during the 9/11 period, and he used to say, crises will come. This is before Rahm Emanuel said, let a crisis go to waste under Obama. I said, the key is when the crisis comes, we need the right leader in the chair at that moment to harness the value of crisis. Because in a way, the only time the government's working at this point, Tom, is in crisis, sadly.
We have President Trump in the chair.
Yeah. So some people say that's the crisis, Trump being there. And they're trying to pull together, obviously, on the left, a kind of...
The shooter might have said that.
Well, I dare say he probably did.
Pull together
a movement that is born of the crisis of the Trump presidency. That's the way the left is defining it at this point. I'm not sure if they'll do such a thing or manage it, but that's what they're trying to do to fire up political engagement. Everyone gets it now. Politics is a participatory sport, so how do I get involved? And something Heather and I talk about sometimes is that itself, and I think Michael might agree, may be an outcome here that gets us to the place we want to be.
Is that Pollyanna-ish, Michael, to think that all this tension is going to lead to some resolution?
Why? I have failed, Heather, because I promised her before the show that I was going to be upbeat and positive and have some fun. Of course, this topic is no fun.
No.
But listening, like, for example, Ron, if a Democrat said, you know what, I want to lead in helping fix health care for that 7 to 10 million people who are affected by Obamacare, you know, that group of people, and I just want to fix it. Forget it. I'll work with anybody. Mr. Trump, let's get together. That Democrat wouldn't make it across the sidewalk before a mob of his fellow friends on the left would bludgeon him into submission.
I don't know about that.
It's completely true. You can't work with Trump. The base won't let you work with Trump.
This is a hypothetical.
Is there a Democrat who will step up in this moment and say,
the right,
Mr. Trump,
I guess,
let's do something together?
But it's not just about what they might propose from the left. It's the fact that there are different interests at play in designing these systems.
So the Pollyanna question is this: notion of we're going to have a leader who's going to step into that space between Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. Where is that person going to come? They're not going to come from the left because the left isn't interested in going there.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Okay, then who is it?
Well, look, I don't have a nominee. I'm just saying participatory sport ideas. Get involved here. Figure out what the issues are. What I think they're lacking right now is some middle ground to say, okay, here is what informed consent looks like. These facts are indisputable on both sides. And something I frankly the media could do more of. That's, I think, very often what they're missing in these dialogues. I've been at it for 20 years.
Yeah, but it's easy to say these are the facts. But if you don't have politicians who are willing to agree on facts, where do we stand? And the road to this magical leader who's going to appear seems awfully long right now. I mean, we just had an election last November. We've got a leader. John in Richmond, Vermont. John, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
We've gotten back to a political zero-sum game. The reason why people, I believe, are acting out, whether it's behavior at a public event or something like yesterday's events, is that they feel shut out. They have no voice. That's either side. When there's no compromise, when the leaders are taking out the tools, and both sides have done this recently with the going to a simple majority in the Senate, changing the Senate rules. I mean, those rules were put in there for a reason, and we've abandoned them. Compromise is not a bad word. It makes it an inclusive process. If it's simple majority, then, you know, we'll change the rules back next time.
Yeah.
It's taken a long time to get here. But it's not a zero-sum game, or shouldn't be.
I mean, you've got people saying, you know, former Senator Danforth saying, look, this hot rhetoric pays, and it wins people positions in our political system right now. Wayne in Columbia, South Carolina. Wayne, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think so. This whole conversation is focused on something entirely different. This is not an issue of discourse. This is an issue of an action, a political action that was taken yesterday. And the reason why I say that is because that's what the person who conducted the action framed it as.
Yes.
He asked, are these people Republican or Democrat?
Yeah. A political action, an action of violence in this case, sadly.
Exactly, which sadly is so common in this country.
So what do you take from that, Wayne? What does that tell you?
What I take from it and what it tells me is that this is what the Republican Party itself has borne, because this country has been moving closer and closer and closer to the ideal world that they seem to want. And yes, when they say, you know, both sides of the problem, of course, when Democrats went along with the repeal of Glass-Steagall in the 90s, that made them a part of the problem. When Democrats completely would not just jump on board with a public option when they had the opportunity in the early Obama years, Democrats were part of the problem. Democrats, it's not an issue so much of just left-right. It's a matter of people continue to see in their material lives themselves be disenfranchised. They lose lose jobs. They can't hold households together. And we have a federal Congress because of gerrymandering, in addition to people being misinformed and unwilling to work together because we feel so disenfranchised, that we have a situation now where we have a working Congress, they're just not working for the citizens.
So what, we're so gerrymandered that the only choice is to go get a long gun, Wayne?
No, not at all. Not at all. That's not the only choice. But perhaps some people, like the gentleman who took this action, aren't able to imagine outside of their anger a way to work within the system as we have it shaped now in order to reform it.
Yeah, I hear you. We know we've got people who feel like, and people on both sides of the political spectrum who feel that they haven't had their hand on the wheel and they want it there. One more call here. Mike in Framingham, Massachusetts. Mike, you're on.
Hi, listen. I don't condole what happened. It was awful. We should never go that low. But if you look at history, these attacks have been primarily on the right. I think people on the left have been pushed to a breaking point. Remember, this Republican Party and this president and everybody he put in his administration has pushed to the right so far that if you try to find compromise in the middle, you'd still be too far to the right. This party, this Republican Party, the control of our government is trying to take our lives from us. They want to take our health care. When you don't have health care, people die. That's reality. And this party, this Republican Party, and this president is literally trying to take our lives from us. They'll take our health care. They want to basically put our lives in the control of profit companies, that if you are sick, those companies lose profit. So they have no incentive to cover you.
So life on the line right there as well, Mike. We've got it. Michael Graham, everybody feels at a breaking point on both sides here. Can it be like that?
Two quick things. It must be hilarious for the conservatives listening who are so upset that Donald Trump, not a conservative, this kind of nationalist big government squish, and listening to your callers go, oh my gosh, the Republicans have taken, they can't even pass legislation.
They're trying.
The notion of this country is fleeing to the, I'm a rightist. I wish we would go to the small government, traditional conservative right. We're clearly not. Secondly, your caller echoed conversation I heard this morning on NPR from Senator Murray, Democrat of Washington, about how changing Obamacare leads to people dying, that you're taking away their health care. Senior citizens, she said, will not have a safety net. Well, of course they have a safety net. It's called Medicare. Every senior citizen has it. So, you know, I don't think that rhetoric leads to anything. It's just so typical. The good news is we are not a politically violent nation, and that says something about the character of America.
Heather Cox-Ridges, and take us once more to what you've seen in the pattern of history, how Americans break through a moment like this. And does it have to have a civil war in the middle of it? If not, what's the way?
I've got to say no on that point. And I really believe that we are not. I think we're sort of on a knife edge, but I don't think we'll do that. What happens is exactly what the last caller identified. And that is that right now, it seems to me, we have a political class that is really out of touch with people on the ground. And especially, as I say, women who are now taking an increasingly active voice. And the disjunction between what's happening in Washington and what's happening in real people's lives cannot be sustained. It is too extraordinary. The same as it was in the 1850s, the same as it was in the 1890s, the same as it was in the 1920s. And when that happens, the system...
Democrats and Republicans, politicians out of touch with that life, or...
That right now, the Republican Party is entirely in charge, and right now it is completely out of whack with what's happening with people on the ground. And when you get that sort of a disjunction, that you get the rise from that situation of new politicians.
But you had plenty of people in the presidential election who thought the Democrats were not in touch with their lives.
I think that's absolutely right. I'm saying that both parties right now are at a period when they are going to reform themselves, and you get from that the rise of new politicians who readjust to reflect what reality is. It tends to happen from within the parties, and it's the population itself that creates those new politicians. And that's the moment, the reason that I am so excited right now to see what bubbles up, who bubbles up, and what the next phase of American history is going to look like.
Do you think we're near that, Ron Suskind?
I think we're in the process. I think we're seeing it unfold, though. I think Americans are seeing it, and I think they're looking hard at their own self-interest as Americans. I think that's what happens. When I say politics is a participatory sport, I think that's a good thing, because folks are looking in the mirror saying, how do I live a decent life here so I'm not scared all the time, that I know my future as an American is going to be sound? And I think that that's a process that will get us the solutions, but there are going to be bumps along the road, and it may in fact be crises ahead that finally get us to that distillate of, let's figure this out before we shoot each other over and over again.
Michael Graham, our time is short. This tension, this kind of, these outbreaks, this violence topping out, or are we still on the ascent here, spiraling up?
I'm with Ron and Heather in the sense that the transition is going to take place, changes are going to happen, new political parties rise and fall. But I want to get back to this. Keep in mind, compared to other, even Western nations, European nations, how relatively low the violence is here. We are generally a good-hearted nation of people who generally care about each other. We get amped up on politics. Some people, you know, run through that division. But I predict you'll see, continuing, that these will be the aberrations. These will be the one-offs.
Well, let us be glad that as a nation we're outraged about this. And let us find a path away from it. We don't need to go any further down this road. I want to thank all three of you. Michael Graham, great to have you with us today. Heather Cox Richardson and Ron Suskind, hosts of the new podcast Freak Out and Carry on politics and history. Check it out from WBUR. Thank you very much, Ron, for being with us.
Great to be here.
And Heather, thank you so much for coming
in. Thank you.
Keep cool and carry on. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.